What's up, you guys? Welcome back to the RND Wrestling Podcast. I'm Ryan Brower.
And I'm DJ Gruber. And today, with you guys, we're going to be discussing some current events going on in the world of pro wrestling and also the life of Brody Lee. Ryan, take us to our current events today.
I'm going to hit you with a couple of topics and let me know what you think. Actually, first off, before I do that, I do want to give a shout out and give my thoughts and prayers to Chris Bay from TNA about like a month ago at this point. I think it's been now that he got injured during a match at Bound for Glory. And I think at the time of this recording, we still don't know exactly everything that's going on. So thoughts and prayers up with him. Hope he comes out on the other side of it, man. Like, it always sucks when you see that from like any wrestler, man. Just you want to see them get better and get back to doing what they do best. So thoughts and prayers with Chris Bay. So DJ, I'm going to hit you with a couple topics here. The first of which, the Hurt Syndicate recently made its debut in AEW with MVP starting us out, then bringing in Shelton Benjamin, who had a couple of great matches on AEW Dynamite. And now they have brought in Bobby Lashley. So kind of give me your thoughts on what you've been thinking of the newly named Hurt Syndicate so far.
The Hurt Syndicate has been really successful so far. I've enjoyed them. I don't know about you, but Sheldon Benjamin's actually putting on 5-star matches and all that. And Bobby Lashley,
it's almost like he's a great wrestler. Who would have thought?
Who would have thought that, you know? Yeah. Who would have thought? And then, you know, comes in Bobby Lashley, you know, the bad man over there, you know, coming in with his like suits and sunglasses. And then he's in a freaking 2-on-1 handicap match on Dynamite. I don't know if you saw that.
Against one of them was Cheeseburger, which was absolutely fantastic. That got a huge pop out of me. But yes, I did see that.
I love that guy. But yeah, you know, Bobby Lashley's like, I'll take on two people. And then you just see him dominate. I'm like, this is not the, you know, the old Hurt Syndicate. This is like the mob Hurt Syndicate, you know, like the Godfather movie and all that. Like, I think they're going to be really good in AEW. And I think this is only the beginning for them. They have so much potential, and I just hope AEW does not waste a second with them.
Yeah, I definitely agree there. So far, they've been keeping them in the mix, but, you know, AEW, we've said before, is just like this embarrassment of riches when it comes to that company, and there's so many talented people over there that it's like, you know, there's only so much TV time to go around, so it's one of those things where it's like you gotta pick and choose. But yeah, definitely the Hurt Business, or, you know, now Hurt Syndicate. I hope they continue to do good with them.
You could make the argument that, yeah, now this can be a debate for another day, but you can make an argument that Dynamite could go to 3 hours instead of 2 hours, but that's just me.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think with everyone that they have on their roster, like if you would have told me when Dynamite first started, I'd have been like, no way, no, keep it at 2 hours. But yeah, just 3-hour wrestling shows in general, I feel like I have mixed feelings about, but I think there is a chance that AEW could get away with it for sure. Go on.
With AEW's rich roster of superstars and all that, you could get away with 3 hours, but that's just me.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, the next topic that I want to hit you with is this Wrestle Dynasty pay-per-view that they're going to be doing at the start of the year. I am very excited about. So this is a New Japan show that's going to be taking place a day after Wrestle Kingdom. For those who don't know, Wrestle Kingdom, you know, the big New Japan show every year. They started a couple years back doing like 2-night Wrestle Kingdoms, and they did that before WWE started doing like 2-night WrestleMania. So they've been doing this for a little while, but now what they've done is it's like, all right, night one is Wrestle Kingdom and night two is going to be like this giant crossover pay-per-view between like AEW, New Japan, CMLL, Ring of Honor, Stardom, like all of the companies that have kind of become allies with each other, I guess, in this, this little, you know, war to protect themselves against the evil, you know, Fed that is WWE. But at the end of the day, the main event, what it looks to be from that show, is going to be Zack Sabre Jr., the current IWGP champion, taking on one of AEW's newest stars, Ricochet. So DJ, kind of give me your thoughts on what you've been thinking of Ricochet so far and what you might think of this main event here.
With a high flyer like Ricochet, I think he's having a good run in AEW so far. I think sky's the limit with him. But, you know, like we've been saying, you know, with AEW's rich roster of talent, they just need to have the right booking and do the small details right. But I'm not complaining about Ricochet's run so far. I think he's been very good. And let me just say, I just wish Zack Sabre Jr. would come to AEW, but then again, he's having a good run in the indies right now, so I'm not complaining. but I love Zack Sabre Jr. and I wish he'd show up on Dynamite here and there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think Zack Sabre Jr. is probably going to stay in New Japan for a long time, and they should definitely hold on to him because, if I'm being perfectly honest, he's kind of like one of the only stars that they have over there right now. They haven't, from all count and purposes, I don't think they've really necessarily built anyone up that well over the last couple of years. But, you know, Kenny Omega is also going to be returning on that New Japan show as well. I think he's going to face Gabe Kidd. So, yeah, this pay-per-view is actually really starting to come together very nicely. So I would like to see it, hopefully. I forget. I probably got to figure out how to order New Japan pay-per-views. But that would be one that I would go out of my way to see, because which is actually kind of crazy considering like that I would much rather see that over Wrestle Kingdom, because Wrestle Kingdom used to have like a lot of prestige behind it. And it still kind of does, but like, if I'm being perfectly honest, I'm much more concerned with this crossover show than anything else.
Well, if you think of Wrestle Kingdom, you know, AEW took most of their big stars away. Like, we took Ospreay, Okada.
Yeah.
I'm probably forgetting others, but those are the main two. Oh, Jay White. Yeah, we took most of their big stars away, and that's probably why Wrestle Kingdom isn't the way it is. But at the same time, you can appreciate New Japan because they do have some good wrestlers over there.
Yeah, I remember me, my brother, and our friend Miles, we went to a New Japan show that was in Chicago. It was like Wind City Riot, I believe it was called. And it was like such a phenomenal show. We can talk about that a different time, though, because we got to keep things moving here. The last thing that I wanted to hit you with for now, DJ, is the possibility of Kevin Steen, a.k.a. Kevin Owens, for, you know, those WWE fans out there. There is a chance. Not saying that this is going to happen, but at the time of this recording, we don't necessarily know that he signed a contract yet to re-sign with WWE. And I believe, according to Fightful Select, I'm pretty sure it's supposed to expire like around the end of the year. So he could re-sign with WWE. I think there's actually a good chance that he probably has re-signed with WWE, but there's always that what if. So I guess, DJ, what would you like to see from Kevin Steen if he shows up in AEW?
And for this what if, I'm going to go all out here. Yeah. If he were to come to AEW, wow, you could do so much with him. Like, you could make him part of the Elite. You could give him a good singles run and give him a match against Ospreay and everyone he fought in the Indies before coming over to the Empire in a way.
Sure. But
you could honestly reunite him with the Young Bucks because, you know, the Young Bucks are probably the best heels, and knowing Kevin as a good heel, he could join them.
And he also has a lot of history with the Bucks too, from like the Ring of Honor days and days on the Indies. So yeah, no, that's definitely a good idea.
I wouldn't mind him as a TNT champion, honestly. It's better than, you know, Jack Perry, honestly.
Well, I think, I mean, by the time that this video goes up, Daniel Garcia might be the TNT champion by that point. So we'll just have to see. So yeah, no, definitely. I would love to see Kevin Steen in AEW. Again, I feel like if I had to like put down a prediction, I would say like I'm like 80% certain that he's probably going to re-sign with WWE, but there is always that what if, and I think that's what that 20% is about.
But then again, though, there's a certain female star wrestler that hasn't re-signed yet with the Empire. You know who I'm talking about?
Becky.
Yeah, she hasn't signed yet.
She is. Yeah, you're right. There's always a what if on her too. I think Becky is like 95% WWE, 5% AEW. But I think that I'm sure Tony Khan has probably made some calls to try and say like, hey, so what are you interested in doing? Like, what's your, you know, name some prices or whatever. But yeah, man, I think we'll have to see. I think the odds are she's probably going to be on like the first Netflix show that they do for Raw. I think if anywhere, that would be where she would make her return. But again, what if?
What if, but like, she's probably going there, but in this day and age, you never know.
You never know. And I don't ever, and that's the other thing as well. It's like, you never know what these people are thinking, right? I know last episode you made a lot of talk about people making business decisions and people making decisions that are best for them. So I don't, you know, like, I don't ever try to put myself in the shoes of these wrestlers. Like, I don't know their motivations. I don't know what all of their plans are, what they're looking to get out of a wrestling contract. So yeah, no, definitely anything can happen.
Oh yeah. And who knows, maybe one of them decides to leave and shocks the world, but they're probably not.
And on that note, let's move on here to what we sort of our big topic of discussion here today, and that is Brody Lee, who again we sadly lost December 26th of 2020. He died at the age of 41, which is just ridiculously young.
Too young.
Lost him way too early. There's been a lot of people in the wrestling world like that we've just lost way too soon. Wyndham Rotunda, aka Bray Wyatt, being another one. So let me kind of get into sort of like his career a little bit when it comes to professional wrestling. So from 2003 to 2012, he was known as Brody Lee, wrestled in places like Chikara, places like Dragon Gate, like Ring of Honor. From 2012 to 2019, he was known as Luke Harper for, you know, all the WWE fans that were watching. He was in FCW, which was like their developmental system before NXT. Then he went to NXT when like that was created, and then became a part of the WWE main roster as part of the Wyatt family. And then from 2019 to 2020, was known as Mr. Brody Lee, also the Exalted One, in AEW. One of the cool things that, you know, to AEW's credit that they did is like I remember at the time they like scrapped whatever show that they had planned, and they're just like, we're gonna just do a tribute show about him and about make it all about him. They turned all the members of the Dark Order baby faces, which I feel like was kind of an inevitable thing to do, because they had them teaming up with like all these other baby faces on the show. Like you had Colt Cabana teaming up with the Young Bucks to take on Matt Hardy and Private Party. You had Evil Uno and Stu Grayson teaming up with Lance Archer. Lance Archer was a babyface at the time, feuding with Eddie Kingston, and they had went up against Eddie Kingston, the Butcher and the Blade, because they were a faction at the time. Hangman Page teamed up with Alex Reynolds and John Silver, which that match that they had with like MJF, who was a part of the Inner Circle at the time, teamed with Santana and Ortiz. And I just remember, man, like when Eric Rowan came out, you know, or Eric Redbeard, as they had to call him, because they, even though Jericho kept calling him Eric Rowan, but you had Excalibur on commentary just keep saying like, Redbeard, say Redbeard, we can't say Rowan. And it was just, it was very funny. It was very, very funny.
Very meaningful.
Then, yeah. And then like John Silver hitting the clothesline, which I think was the most meaningful part of that whole match, and then him just breaking down crying afterward, like it was such an emotional moment. Oh, at negative one, Brody's son hit MJF with a kendo stick during that match as well. And then you had Anna Jay, the only female in the Dark Order, teamed up with her friend Ty Conti, take on Britt Baker, Penelope Ford. And then in the main event, you had 10, who was negative one's favorite wrestler in the Dark Order, team up with Orange Cassidy and Cody Rhodes to take on Team Taz. So it was one of those things, man, where like it was such a meaningful show in terms of like celebrating the life of Brody Lee. They did like a tribute video, but I remember like whatever the song was, like Tony Khan had bought the rights of it so that like this tribute could live forever, because you know, like if you don't sometimes buy the rights to songs or whatever, then like you got to end up changing it later, and then it's just like not the same. So the fact that that was paid for in perpetuity, it absolutely fantastic. And then they also retired the TNT championship, the one that Brody carried, and they named negative one the TNT champion for life, which is amazing.
It was very amazing. Like, and if you look back at that card too, like it was just such an epic night for everyone, not only to commemorate the life of Brody Lee, but all the matches that they've had too. Like, it was very inspiring to know that the Dark Order was going to carry on Brody's legacy. And also just like how everyone was emotional and trying to move on, even though with a guy like Brody Lee, it was very hard to move on.
If you want to look at specifically Anna Jay and how far she's come in her wrestling journey, the Anna Jay that we are seeing right now, like she very just recently had a run in Japan, and she has not come back to AEW the same person, the same competitor, I should say. Mm-mm. She is like rose up my list as far as favorite women's competitors in AEW. And like, you could just tell like, okay, there is a difference to her. She carries herself a different way. She's wrestling a little bit of a different way. And it just goes to show you like how far you can come in your journey, as long as you put forth the effort and the work. And that's exactly what Anna Jay did.
Well, I remember when Anna Jay first debuted, I'm like, she has some potential, but you know, she needs to, you know, clean up some her work and all that stuff. And then once when Brody Lee took her in, she just became a whole different wrestler. And man, like, I don't know about you, but that's when she started rising up in my top five, you know, women wrestlers in AEW, because
sure,
Brody Lee unlocks that evil side in her, almost like, you know, when the House of Black unlocked Julia Hart, you know?
Something yeah. Like that. That's a really good comparison for sure. I think Brody brought the best out of everybody in the Dark Order when it came to, I mean, look at all those BTE segments, man. That stuff was so freaking funny. And in a little bit here, we can definitely talk about some of, like, you know, our favorite BTE moments if you've got any. He brought, like, out this evil side to them. He brought a comedy side out of them. And I think that to me is just the credit of a great wrestler, is like, not only are you yourself great at what you do when it comes to promo work, when it comes to in-ring work, but when you can make everybody around you better, that is the perfect scenario to me. That's the perfect wrestler, because I've always said it before, man, like, a rising tide raises all ships, and you have to be able to elevate people with you if you want this to be successful, if you want your faction to be successful, if you want your company to be successful. You can't just go and bury everybody on the roster and say that you're the only good one, because then what are you the champion of? You're the champion of nothing. So Brody just personified that, man, with just being able to help everyone around him. And it's a shame that, like, I would have loved to have, like, met the guy in person, even just like to get an autograph or whatever, or just like take a picture with him. Like, mm-hmm. That would have been cool. It's just thinking about it now, man, it's just like, it's still tough, man. But obviously our hearts go out to his friends and family, you know, because I'm sure, as I mean, I guess I can't really speak for them, I don't know if it gets easier or harder. I've never I've lost loved ones before, but also, like, a lot of it was like when I was very young. So I guess I don't, for people that have, like, known others for years and years and years, like, I guess I can't really speak to that. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying?
Oh yeah. Totally get that. And it's very sad to know that Brody passed away and all that, but at the same time, he did so much in the industry. Like, you can't deny that he had success, and, you know, and he was able to maintain it for the amount of time that he did.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that I came prepared with today is a top 10 list. So it's not going to be the traditional way that we've normally done it, where it's like I give a list, DJ gives a list, and we kind of compare. This is kind of my list, because I've seen a little bit more Brody Lee stuff than you have. Like, you're very familiar with his AEW work. I was watching during the time that he was in WWE, so I'm very familiar with his work there, and along with AEW. Unfortunately, I'm not too familiar with his indie work. It's something that I'll definitely, you know, try to go out of my way to look more into. But today I put up a list of, like, my 10 favorite Brody Lee, Luke Harper moments from both WWE and AEW. And DJ, if you have anything that you want to say as I'm going through this list, if you want to make any comments about stuff, by all means, feel free to comment. We good?
Sure thing.
Okay. So if I'm going to start out with my number 10 on my list, so this is going to be like his best matches / moments. So it's going to be like a mix of both, from both AEW and WWE. So I just want to make sure I clarify that. So the first of which is his matches with Dean Ambrose / John Moxley, because whenever the two of them were in the ring together, whether it was WWE, whether it was AEW, the two had incredible chemistry together. I always found the one match that they had, I can't remember which pay-per-view this was. I think it was like an Extreme Rules pay-per-view or something for WWE, where, like, the two were wrestling. They started wrestling at the start of the pay-per-view. It was like a, like, no DQ, no holds barred style match, something like that. And I remember they ended up, like, wrestling their way into a car, and the car took off. They went away. And then about, like, halfway through the show, they came back and they were still wrestling. And then that's when they finished the match. And I was like, I thought that was very funny.
I think that was an Extreme Rules match, thinking about it. That had to be an Extreme Rules.
And then another match of theirs that comes to mind too is the match that they had for the AEW World Championship at Double or Nothing 2020, I believe it was.
Yeah, it was 2020.
Yeah, yeah. So, and that was like the first pay-per-view in the pandemic, I believe, as well. And one of the episodes that I want to do is we can dive deep into like pandemic era stuff. But I just thought, like, man, the confidence level that AEW had in Brody Lee in his first pay-per-view match to put him in a match for the top championship in the company. Like, I think that just goes to show you exactly what AEW thought of Luke Harper, aka Brody Lee, John Huber, and that is a main event wrestling guy.
You wouldn't have thought about it when he was in WWE that he could be a main event guy, but
yeah,
with AEW, I don't know what Tony Khan did, but he turns that guy into a main event stud, and let me just say that was a sight to see.
At number 9 on my list, I have his debut in AEW as the Exalted One. You want to go into this one a little bit?
Oh, yeah. That was probably one of my favorite moments of Brody Lee, because like the Dark Order was like silent for a minute, and then they were like, he's here. And then he comes out as the Exalted One. You know, he totally decimates, I forget who it was, but you know, he's beating up everyone. And then
I think it was SCU. I think it was SCU, that word feuding with that the Dark Order at the time.
Yeah, SCU. He like, you know, decimates SCU. And then next thing you know, he just is like standing there like he's the leader. I'm just like, no way he's the leader of the Dark Order. And then, you know, you see all the Dark Order members like being like, he's the Exalted One, whatever. Yeah. And I'm just like, no way. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, because I remember too, like there were talks like, okay, is it going to be Luke Harper? Is it going to be Matt Hardy? Because Matt Hardy was like the other big name that was going to be coming into AEW at the time. And ironically, they did both come in on the same night. But yeah, then the reveal that it was Brody Lee. And yeah, man, just it was absolutely incredible. I loved how like the voice started out muffled like in that video package. But then as it like went on, the voice became more and more clear. So it got to a point where I was like, oh my gosh, it's Luke Harper. Oh my gosh, he's here. Let's go. What a fantastic moment for sure. Speaking of moments, moving on to my number 8 is him winning the Intercontinental Championship. The match was, you know, fine. It was whatever. But like, it was during the Team Cena versus Team Authority storyline back in 2015. And Luke Harper just like winning the Intercontinental title. I was like, oh, okay. That's interesting. Yeah, no, I didn't see it coming for sure. Cause I'm like, okay, well, like Luke Harper, he's what? They just like, they broke up the Wyatt family. Now he's just going to team with the Authority and like, they just made him Intercontinental Champion. And then like, I can't, like, week or two later, somewhere in that as well, Eric Rowan ended up joining Team Cena. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And I was, man, I was waiting for the Luke Harper, Eric Rowan pay-per-view match for the Intercontinental title. And it never happened because, like, I think Dolph ended up winning it back like a month later. But I was so ready for it. I was like, oh, this would be such a great story. And then it just never happened. But him winning the Intercontinental Championship, which, you know, is, you know, it's a prestigious title, even though WWE, I feel like, has went out of their way for like almost a decade telling you that it wasn't important. But him winning it is definitely important, and I do not want to take that away from Luke Harper.
Definitely a big miss when we could have had the former Wyatt members fighting each other. That never happened, sadly.
Yeah. At number 7, I've got his match with Randy Orton at Elimination Chamber 2017. This match was so underrated. This was during the time period like when Raw and SmackDown were doing their own pay-per-views, and they put Randy Orton versus Luke Harper on this card, and I'm like, okay, sure, I guess, whatever. Okay, fine.
It's a match on the card.
Yeah. And then the match happened, and I was like, these boys are working. Whoa, this is actually pretty good. And it was such like this sleeper match on the card. It actually might be my favorite match on that card from what I remember. But yeah, man, shouts out to both men. This should have put Luke Harper in the plans for WrestleMania with Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt, because their match was going to be Orton and Bray for the WWE Championship, because Bray would win the title later on in the night in the Elimination Chamber. Randy Orton, who was like a part of the Wyatt family still, and like Luke Harper was like getting out of it again. And man, I wanted Luke Harper to be a part of that WrestleMania so bad and make it a triple threat, because the match that we got between the two at Mania wasn't that great with all the spooky nonsense that they had, like on the ring, like all the bugs or whatever, like the projected screen that they portrayed there of like all the bugs and weird. It was so wonky. It was so weird. But that match that he had at the Elimination Chamber with Randy Orton, the finish of the match, this was actually really cool, because it was an ooh ah spot, you know, where like punching back and forth. The crowd goes ooh ah. Harper then goes for his clothesline, and in the process of him doing that, gets hit with the RKO, and I'm like, oh my gosh, what a finish! And I'm like, and I just stood there, I'm like, bravo, bravo. Yeah, so I don't expect you to really have much to say about it, because I don't think you've seen the match before.
I don't think so.
Okay, I'll have to show you that one sometime. At number six on my list, winning the SmackDown Tag Team Championships with Rowan at WrestleMania 34. So this was a big moment. Go ahead, DJ. You got one for this?
Okay, well, just for a clarification, was this when they became the Bludgeon Brothers, or was this still...
This was when they became the Bludgeon Brothers. Good job. You are right.
If I may, can I talk a little bit about them? Because
go ahead.
Let me just say, it was weird for me because, like, you know, they didn't talk much, but they were probably one of the more dominant tag teams during that time.
Yeah.
Bro, when they came out with the hammers, you just knew that it was going to be like, you know, a bludgeon or a fight, you know, because the other team couldn't really stand a chance against them.
Yeah, dude, that match that they had at WrestleMania with like the New Day and the Usos, like they very much would like dominate the majority of that match and leading them to win the tag team titles. So the fact that like he got to do that with like one of his best friends on the biggest stage of them all being WrestleMania, like that's got to be like one of the coolest feelings in the world.
For sure. And they had that, I think they had the titles for like the whole, a good chunk of the year, probably.
Oh gosh, now I'm trying to remember.
I remember watching Clash of Champions that year, you know, when that was still a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And they were dominant in that pay-per-view too. Like they had to have it for a good chunk of the year, I think.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. I mean, again, I don't know if it was necessarily about the match for me that really stands out, but just this like idea that he was able to win the tag team championships with his buddy. Absolutely fantastic. At number five on my list, I've got The Shield versus the Wyatts at Elimination Chamber in 2014. I know that Luke Harper only consisted of 1/6 of this match, and guess what? I don't care, because all six participants of the match was absolutely fantastic in a time period where WWE was not giving the fans what they want. And they've been known to do that for like the longest time. But this especially around the time that like everybody was saying, we want Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania in the main event. We want him to be WWE champion. And the company just said, no, we're not doing it. We're not doing it. We're not doing it. And they kept just like denying the fans of what they wanted. And they were doing John Cena versus Randy Orton for like the 100th time on pay-per-view. And it's just like, oh my gosh. But this match between the Shields and the Wyatts, and it should have been at WrestleMania. It should not have been at the Elimination Chamber. It should have been at WrestleMania. But my goodness, this crowd was so hot for this. And these six men worked their butts off. Like Seth, there was a part of the match, because I just went back and rewatched it recently. There was a like part in the middle of the match with Seth Rollins and Luke Harper, and those two were just going at it. I'm like, this is freaking awesome.
I remember watching the highlights of that match, and let me just say, I'm just like, what did they not do? Because like, you know, you could have had this match a while ago, and yet you just give it to them now as a fan. It's just like, where was this earlier? You know, like, because these are all talented guys, like, where was this earlier?
Yeah, dude, this match is going to stand the test of time for those that remember it, man. Cause like it, oh my gosh, like I could sit here and just talk about the match all day. But I do want to move on as well to some of his other moments here. And another match that I want to talk about at my number four is the match that he had with Dolph Ziggler at TLC 2014. Unfortunately, you know, Ziggler had won back the Intercontinental Championship. Now, I say unfortunately, at the time, I was actually a really big Dolph Ziggler fan. Like, from 2014 into 2015, I think was like my, like, was like peak Dolph Ziggler for me, when like Dolph Ziggler was like actually freaking awesome. Probably one of the best ladder matches that I've seen, I think. I mean, I know there's like a couple other good ones, of course, but like this opened up the TLC pay-per-view, and like both men worked their butts off. And like there was a moment where like Harper powerbombed Ziggler on a ladder, and it just looked like the gnarliest thing, but it was so cool.
It was crazy. And like to think that you could put him in a ladder match, or, you know, any type of situational match, like you could put him in, he's an all-around wrestler, in my opinion. You know, you could put him in a TLC match, ladder match, or like heck, steel cage match. Like, he was going to be dominant either way. And back to Dolph Ziggler too, about being at his peak performance, like that was probably the time when Dolph was, you know, actually getting a decent push for once. And he was actually, you know, being a respectful wrestler. You know, everyone was respecting him at the time. Yeah. And not going to mention this, but, you know, a couple years later, you know, they, you know, did not book him the way that, you know, a fan would have wanted him.
No, for and, sure.
But look at him now. He's doing pretty good at TNA.
Yeah, he seems to be doing well for himself there for sure. Going on to my number three. So I don't have a specific one because there's so many great ones, but I just put on here all of the Dark Order BTE skits. So you want to take the lead on this one? Yep, go ahead.
Can I take this one quick?
Yeah.
I will just say this, like, from a personal standpoint, the way I got through COVID was watching BTE skits, and let me just say, the Dark Order humor, oh, man. I won't forget how many times they just had Chili's and the comedy they would just make, man. Oh, my gosh. That was the best part of COVID, honestly.
If there was anything that came up good out of that era, it was the BTE skits. Like, it brought out this different personality to the Dark Order, and like it was the most over thing on the show. Everyone loved it that was watching it. The throwing of the newspapers was probably one of the funnier things as well. Alex Reynolds and John Silver, they're like, so we got Jungle Boy in on this, and Luke Harper's like, or excuse me, Brody Lee's like, wait, you guys got Jungle Boy? You guys got Jungle Boy? Because like he was going after younger talent on the roster that he wanted to mold and make a part of his family, like people like Jungle Boy, people like Hangman Page. And they go in there, and it's not Jungle Boy that they caught, it's Griff Garrison. And be like, you idiots, it's so good, it's so funny. The one where they get Sue involved, and like Sue brings them food. Brody Lee throws the food on the ground as like Sue walks away, and he's like, you guys are all idiots. You guys, blah, 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 blah. And then Sue walks back in the room, and she's like, what did you guys do to my food? And Brody Lee looks at her, and he's like, John Silver doesn't like your food. Like, you throw papers, Sue, throw papers. And she just nonchalantly throws the papers, and it misses him completely. Brody's sitting there laughing, like everyone's sitting there crackling, and he's like, pick him up, do it again. And he looks at John Silver's like, you fucking sell for Sue. It's so good.
That was a classic.
You got any?
Yeah, I got ones? A couple.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Just like, well, this isn't Brody Lee necessarily, but like when Adam Cole first came into AEW, and you know, John Silver and Reynolds were going after him. Oh my gosh, like when Adam Cole was in his hotel room that one time, and then John Silver and Reynolds were right there with him.
That was a good one too. Yeah,
that was so funny. But,
and they got that side of them because of Brody. Like, I think it all does. I think, like, I know you mentioned, like, that was more of an Adam Cole one, but at the same time, like, it all of that stuff that the Dark Order did on BTE, man, like, that is a lot in a testament to what Brody brought to the table.
And another Brody Lee moment I like.
Yeah.
I think this was around the holidays. Like, they were ordering Chili's for, like, a Christmas dinner, I think it was.
I don't know if I remember this one.
It was either Thanksgiving or Christmas, and then, like... Okay. Brody Lee was, you know, like, what's going on here? And then they were all like, we're having dinner or whatever. And then he was on his rant, like, you know, what are you guys doing? Or, you know.
Yeah, that's something that we do.
He was just on his usual rant. You know, he was like slamming the Chili's bag, whatever. And I'm just like, poor Dark Order, you know, they try hard, you know, to, you know, be a family. And then,
John,
you know,
Silver always got the worst end of it, too.
And like, Brody was yelling at John Silver for whatever reason. Like,
yeah,
I missed that. It was fun.
Dude. I remember like one of the John Silver moments with Brody that stands out to me is after he wins the TNT championship, which is actually going to be my number two on this list, was squashing Cody Rhodes and becoming the TNT champion. I can get more into that in a second. But I remember it was either like, I think it was the week after he won it, and he comes out there and he's, you know, Brody's doing his thing, and John Silver just gets the microphone. He's like, I just want to say, you the man, Brody, you the man. And I just sat there crackling up the entire time. These guys, oh man, it was such good stuff. Getting into the Cody Rhodes thing though, I don't think anybody saw this coming. And there, sure, like we thought, okay, maybe Brody Lee could take the championship off of Cody Rhodes, but like the way that he did it, he won this match in under 2 minutes on Dynamite. And there was a post-match beatdown afterwards where they took out Cody, they took out Arn, they took out Dustin, they took out Brandy, like they took out everybody in the Rhodes Nightmare Factory. And it was such an effective segment. And the reason I bring up that post-beatdown was there was a moment early on in the history of AEW where they attempted to do something similar, where like the Dark Order beat down all the members of the Elite. And it did not work at all. It was one of the worst segments at the time in AEW. I think that was actually after that show, because the Elite was booking the show up that time. And Tony Khan afterward was like, okay, guys, y'all had your chance to do this. Like, we've got ratings falling now. Y'all just did that. I'm taking over the book now. Like, this is how we're doing it now. And yeah, man, it was one of those segments that just like, it was kind of an embarrassment, like, I don't want to say embarrassment, but it wasn't good. And if you really think about it, the structure of the beatdown that happened to the Nightmare Factory was in a way almost the same thing, but this one worked. And it worked because you had all of the right elements there. And you had this shock factor of Brody Lee squashing Cody Rhodes in under 2 minutes to become the TNT champion. And then to like get Brandy out there too and hurt her in front of Cody. And it was just such this effective thing. And they had this presence about them because Brody was there to bring that presence and that seriousness to the Dark Order. They can be funny on the comedy skits or whatever on BTE, but then there comes the serious side of things when they're on Dynamite, and he brought that.
That was so awesome to watch, and there's just so many good moments from AEW. Like, it's just hard to choose, like, you know, which one was number one, because there were so many great moments in his time for AEW for the short amount of time that he was there.
Do you have any moments that you want to talk about?
I think you covered most of them. Like,
well, I've got one more, and it's not a moment, actually, it's a match. I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. See if you're thinking what I'm thinking. What do you think I'm thinking?
Oh, wait. Match.
I'll give you a hint. It involves Cody.
Oh, wait. Was this the match that he won the TNT title for? Or?
What kind of a match was it? Do you remember?
It was not a normal match, was it? I'm just trying to think here. Was this like a all no DQ?
No. Oh, you want it? One more guess.
One more guess here. It wasn't a steel cage. That's on my guess. TLC?
No, it was a dog collar match. It was the first dog collar match that AEW had ever done. And it had been the first collar match that had been done on mainstream wrestling in a long period of time as well.
I forgot.
That's all good. That's all good.
I forgot how great it was. That was the best match in a long time, man.
This match put the dog collar stipulation back on the map. Recently I was watching, I recently went through like a lot of my older WCW DVDs that I had. And one of them was like a Starrcade DVD. And I was watching a match between Rowdy Roddy Piper, versus Greg Valentine at Starrcade 83. And they had a dog collar match at that show. And like, I would argue between like that one and the Cody one are both two incredible dog collar matches of all time. What I actually really liked about the Roddy Piper and Greg Valentine one is like, they actually used the end of the match to like get more heat on it and stuff. And like, I thought that was really effective. But with the Cody and Brody match, this was kind of like their big feud ender. And I think this might've been Brody's last match on AEW TV too, if I'm thinking about it.
It's got to be, probably.
I don't know if he had any more after this, but like, this was the big feud ender. and Cody was able to win back the TNT championship. But, you know, I think when it came to this, like, it takes two to tango, man. And both men, they did the tango. That is, that's for sure. Yeah.
We're going to have to, like, watch this again, man.
AEW's coming to Max soon. We're going to have the entire library right there. It's going to make our lives so much easier, I promise you.
I am telling you, we're going to have to spend, like, you know, like a week or two just binge-watching this stuff, man. We're going to have to binge-watch some of this.
Yeah, for sure. Dude, one of the things, just real quickly, kind of, like, off-topic, but, like, I've been... one of the things that I've started doing is going back, because Peacock has, like, a lot of the old wrestling libraries and stuff from, like, WWE, ECW, WCW. So one of the things that I've started doing is going through Monday Nitro for WCW, like, started back at, like, the end of 95. And I'm, like, I'm six episodes through, and, like, each of them are, like, an hour long. And I said to my friend Miles, I'm like, okay, guys, I'm going to see how far I get with this, like, before I get bored. And I guess the point I'm trying to make here is, like, when it comes to AEW and, like, us going back through their library, like, I will not get bored, because like, the company is absolutely fantastic. It's given us so many amazing moments, and especially with the man that we've been talking about here today, Brody Lee.
Oh, man.
Do you have any, like, closing thoughts? Anything you want to wrap us up with?
Well, being here on this, in this episode, discussing this with you, it amazes me how, in the short amount of time that he was with AEW, how much he was able to accomplish, because...
Yeah.
I'll be honest, I was very surprised that he was able to do as much as he did, because not a lot can do that.
No, for sure, dude. Like, he came into AEW and he immediately made an impact. Like, he came in as the Exalted One, you know, had a big angle there. At his first pay-per-view, he's wrestling John Moxley for the AEW World Championship. And then just a few months later, he becomes TNT champion, and he's got, you know, a couple of great TV matches that had happened during that time as well. I think he wrestled Dustin Rhodes. I think he wrestled Orange Cassidy. One of the matches that I really wish they would have done at that time, because he was also in that TNT division as well, is Darby Allin. That was like the one Brody match that I would have wanted to see from that time that we didn't get to see.
I thought they had a match in. Brody was trying to recruit him, whatever, but Darby said no.
No, yeah, I mean, they might have done an angle with Brody and Darby, but I, to my knowledge, I don't think they ever had a match.
I knew they had an angle, but I just, man, we're going to rewatch this.
That's what I'm saying, man. Like, we got to go back, man, and, like, it's going to be so good. Like, we can go on HBO and just start, like, you know, streaming the binging the crap out of this if we can, whenever we have time, of course. Oh, but, yeah. Yeah, man, no, for sure. That was definitely the one of the matches, like, at that time that I would have really liked to have seen. But, like, he had an effective TNT title run, and it had some great title defenses, an incredible match where he lost the championship with Cody. Just like you said, he did a lot in a short amount of time. And, you know, just, you know, you kind of wish it would have been longer, but you're grateful for the time that you had him for. And I think it's just a good reminder to all of us that, like, you know, we never know, you know, not to get, like, too, you know, emotional, too savvy, philosophical, but, like, we never know how much time we're going to have. So it's kind of just like, you make do with what you can, and you do the best that you can in whatever it is that you're doing. And I think that it is exactly what Brody Lee did in his short amount of time that he was in AEW. And he made the most out of his WWE run, too. He did what he could with the stuff he was given. But no one can take away the man's incredible career that Brody has had.
Mm-mm, for sure.
So I believe, you guys, that is going to wrap us up for today and this month's episode of the R&D Wrestling Podcast. We thank you guys so much for checking us out, listening, whether it be Apple, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts. We're up on like at least 5 to 6 different platforms right now. So we're hoping that you guys, you know, thank you for checking us out. We hope that you recommend us to your friends, your family, whoever likes professional wrestling. And I hope you guys are excited because next month's episode, that'll be going up in January, we are going to be doing, like, I guess, an award show for like all the, you know, best moments and matches and wrestlers from the year of 2024. We're going to have a, like our little, I guess like our own little version of the Slammy show, I guess. And we're going to have like, like 8 to 10 different categories that that will be picked on by myself and DJ. We'll kind of have like our own little categories for who we think, you know, we're going to go over best matches, best moments, wrestler of the year for both men and women, tag team of the year. These are just a few of the awards that we have planned for you guys. So hopefully you guys are excited for that. And yeah, DJ, thanks for coming on.
Anytime. Thank you for having me on. And also, guys, make sure to spread the word out like always and try to start listening to now, because we're going to have some big things in store for you next year. So subscribe, spread the word to your friends, and we'll see you guys next time.
Thank you very much, guys. If you're watching this on YouTube, you guys can like the video and subscribe to the channel there. And like DJ said, we'll see you guys in the next one.